Lee Stabert, and today we're letting you in on a conversation we had in early September, gathered around a table in a sunny room at the Science Center in University City. In honor of the nonprofit's 60th anniversary, and in anticipation of the upcoming Nucleus Awards, we gathered local leaders in science, healthcare, and community development to talk about inclusive growth. In addition, we talked about the strengths of and challenges faced by the City of Philadelphia, and how members of the innovation ecosystem can work together to make sure the next 60 years look just as bright.
Jeff Mrazzo, co-founder of Spark Therapeutics.
I'm Tiffany Wilson, president and CEO of the Science Center.
Jim Burnett, executive director for Vested In.
Thank you all for being here. I'm really excited to have this conversation. Let's start big picture. Let's talk about Philadelphia. Why is Philadelphia a good place to build something? And that can be a biotech startup, that can be a mom and pop shop, that can be a community organization.
Well, I think when it comes to biotech, I think over the course of the last 10, 15, 20 years, the university infrastructure around Philadelphia has just established itself as one of the places in the world that you want to come to find the best research and the best scientists who are coming up with the most important new innovations that could change human health.
And do you think that's something about just the institutions who are here? Is it about the history here? Is it the legacy? Is it the people? Is there something you can kind of pinpoint?
Yeah, I mean, you can look back to, without citing very specific things, you can look back to a whole series of firsts that have happened in Philadelphia, whether it was first hospitals, first places where a certain new type of therapy made its way, ultimately as a medicine to patients, you know, first developments of things that help prevent disease. I mean, a whole host of history of breaking new ground, not being afraid to be on the leading edge of some area, all in the service of trying to build and make a better life for people or impact human health.
So Tiffany, you are a transplant to Philadelphia, so maybe you have a different perspective and can kind of take a further step back. What do you think about Philly as a place to start something?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been at the Science Center now for almost 3 years. I moved here from Atlanta. And prior to coming to the Science Center, I had no idea how much amazing initiatives, innovation, entrepreneurial activity existed in Greater Philadelphia. I was aware of the Science Center. And what really inspires me about it is, to Jeff's point, there is such a rich history here. And it's almost like we've got the rich history meets modern medicine. And just kind of the scrappiness of Philadelphia and that spirit is really something unique that I haven't seen in other parts of the country. I've been inspired, I think, by the business and civic engagement here in a different way. There's an element here of anything is possible, and with the educational institutions and the government institutions and the nonprofits here, there's really amazing work that can be done.
I feel like the perfect preparation for this conversation was I walked today from 30th Street Station first to 34th and Walnut, and then to here. And it's unbelievable. You come out of this huge historic train station, and then you walk through, and there's just new building after new building. And then you get to the Penn campus, and it's, you know, your old buildings. And it really felt like the built environment was really speaking to me about the story about Philadelphia and about innovation here. Jim, is there anything you want to add? I mean, I know you're speaking more from the community side.
I actually want to shift to kind of more on the small business and capital side. Similar to both of their examples, I think We are a CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution, and the industry really started in Philadelphia, and there's more CDFIs in Philadelphia than there are anywhere in any other city across the country. And so what that does is create opportunity for small businesses. So I think, one, we have to do a better job of just letting people know that we're here, even though we've put out literally billions of dollars from the CDFI industry into businesses, shopping centers, other affordable housing, daycares, even the charter school system couldn't have grown the way it grew in Philadelphia without the CDFI industry. So I think these new, great, innovative opportunities will only continue to expand in Philadelphia as, one, new people come into it, and existing residents have the opportunity to participate in the process.
It's interesting to hear you say that part of it is a communication challenge, is just letting people know you're here. And I think also it's about bringing people together. And we're talking a lot about community here. And we're sitting in the Science Center right now. Tiffany, can you talk about the work the Science Center does to kind of do some of that communicating and maybe bring people together?
Yeah, it's been a challenge, and we continue to evolve. The Science Center, we're celebrating our 60-year history this year. And it's really evolved over the last 60 years to meet the needs of the ecosystem where it is now. And today we're really focused on three, four key areas. The first being the startup support to support mainly companies developing healthcare technology, life sciences type innovations. And, you know, I refer to that as the tip of the spear, because if we don't get the business part right, mm-hmm. then everything else doesn't matter. There won't be any jobs. People will go other places. And so how do we create mechanisms of support to bring the scientist into the Science Center and give them adequate support they need for business incubation and startup? And then kind of thinking about the workforce and the next generation, we do a lot of work around STEM education and workforce training, and where we're really focusing on, it's not necessarily the workforce development aspects, but how do we create an opportunity for exposure for all the different career pathways? And so starting in middle school and going into adults, they come into the Science Center, kids during the school day, and they're mentored by scientists on the campus. But how do we get them thinking about careers within STEM that doesn't necessarily require being in a lab? So whether your superpower is finance or marketing, right, or operations or executive leadership in the future, it takes all of those functions for a viable life sciences industry. And then, you know, we're convener, so we're sitting here in Quorum, and in a couple of weeks we'll have our annual Nucleus Awards to really celebrate that innovation, that creativity, that collaboration. But we have the space to be able to bring various people, multidisciplinary groups into the Science Center to really inspire thought leadership and ideas and action, and really think about it as we grow and support the life sciences and healthcare technology ecosystem. How do we make sure that everyone's got an opportunity for a career in STEM related type functions? And the last area is around capital and access to capital. And how do we, not necessarily on the gene therapy side because those numbers are so large, but if we're talking about healthcare technology, how do we make sure that a broad range of diverse founders working on some of these ideas to solve issues within their communities have the capital that they need to get to the point where they can be successful?
So Jeff, you're coming from one of these companies that grew here, et cetera. And I talk to my kids a lot about being a good citizen. And there's an interesting idea about being a good corporate citizen, being a company that is also a member of the community.
I mean, so first of all, when we started the company, we made a conscious decision to build it here. It was based on research that was happening down the street at primarily at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, but also at the University of Pennsylvania. And frankly, we had a little bit of some of the end in mind, which was that if you, not unlike what Tiff is talking about, I mean, if a company is located somewhere other than where the research began, first of all, I personally think it makes it a little more difficult when you're beginning to have the constant coordination and communication with the researchers to really understand what you're trying to replicate and build and ultimately commercialize. So there's a practical reason why you want to be close. But my vision was ultimately if Spark could become a viable, long-term, sustainable company, that being physically proximate would allow people who were in and around the neighborhood that we were building the company to have opportunities there. Mm-hmm. And I was actually in a meeting yesterday where we were talking about a program that it's not dissimilar from what Tiff, you were just mm-hmm. talking about, where it's bringing first-generation college students into opportunities in life sciences companies. And we were sort of asking why we had gotten a certain number of interns, which was great, but there was a bigger number that we had had a goal for. And the primary reason was transportation, was mm-hmm. that there were opportunities that were not available to students because they were 10 miles, 20 miles, 30 miles out of the city. And so that was sort of one of my hopes long term, is that being able to build a company that first had, you know, of course, science-based jobs, but then eventually had jobs that were in finance and HR. And now, of course, with what Spark is doing, building a 600,000 square foot facility right along the walking path.
I saw it.
Those jobs then become more around manufacturing and facility management and quality control, and branches out to a whole host of new types of positions. And having that physically here meant that the opportunities would just be completely different for people than if they had to travel to them. So we thought a lot about that. And we also just thought about, frankly, the proximity of this location could also attract people from relative, in addition to people locally, you could attract people far and wide, which is good for the business because of the rail line and the proximity to Amtrak and regional rail. So there were a whole host of reasons. I do remember, it was really interesting though, somewhere 4 or 5 years into the company's history and building the company, we had an opportunity presented to us to move the company to somewhere else, and there was a relatively large tax benefit to doing that. And I remember sitting in a board meeting and one of my board members saying, you know, the reality is the company is so intertwined, the DNA of the company is so intertwined in the community that regardless of sort of the potential incremental financial benefit, you would upset so much of the culture and sort of the identity of people in the company being associated with Philadelphia that we can't do that. And, you know, that was where I was heading anyway in a direction of my recommendation, but it made it simpler.
And I'm sure using DNA as a metaphor was like really, exactly. really impactful in that board meeting. People, they got it right away. So I think we're all talking about how great things are and how ripe this place is for development and exciting stuff. But there are challenges too. So Jim, can you talk a little bit about some of those challenges? And, you know, we're in this beautiful glass building, but West Philly and Philadelphia is a city with a lot of poverty, a lot of challenges. What is the role of the entrepreneurial community in tackling some of those really, really tough problems?
I want to go back to something Tiffany said and starting with middle school. Mm-hmm. I think we do a very poor job of investing in young people in their education. And whether that is a state challenge or that's a city challenge or that's an all of us challenge, that investment is not happening at the level it needs to. And I don't mean just cash. From an exposure perspective, a lot of the young people don't even know that a Spark Therapeutic exists, right? So to the extent that they could possibly be one of the scientists at Spark is just totally foreign to them. Then you want me to finance this huge building that I don't know anything about that, or even can conceptualize the cost that it would take to build something like that. And so the concern that we have, and one of the reasons we started a youth internship with high school students, so we got to get back to the middle school eventually, but we wanted to start somewhere where we could actually have an immediate impact, is providing exposure to young people to these things. And then how do we introduce you to people so that you can see yourself in those spaces, be comfortable with it, and know you belong? Because then the other piece that you have to deal with is this imposter syndrome where they don't feel like they belong. And so making them feel comfortable and welcome in those spaces is really important.
And how do you do that?
Well, honestly, we tell them. Yeah. I know for myself, I got that from my grandmother. My grandmother was an immigrant from Colombia. And for her, she told me always, you belong wherever you are. And so for me, it was something that was just reinforced every day. So what we try to do with our high school students is reinforce to them that they are. So we take them to Pfizer's brand new headquarters in Manhattan. And we're more than happy to go to Spark too, because it's right down the street. But that $3 billion building, and we've been the last 2 years. So last year we were there and they were just building it. And this year we're there and Pfizer's employees are going in and out of the building. So for them to be in those spaces and now know that they can go into those spaces and feel welcome in those spaces, that's huge. So now that's a different idea set that they go back to school with. I think the challenge for us is being able to do that over an extended period of time and not just an 8-week intern. Mm-hmm. So it has to be more than just a vested in effort. It's more of a community effort, meaning business, education, government, kind of all working together to provide that.
And it's the long game.
Right, absolutely.
Right? A lot of these things, we want to see next year, what was the result? How many students? How many went on to get STEM jobs? How many fell off the radar?
Yeah.
It's hard to track, it's hard to measure, and it's almost impossible to do it in 1 to 3 year cycles. And so, you know, I think that is the challenge in front of us now with all the opportunity there, is how do we bring everyone together to say, all right, collectively as a community, how do we think 20 years from now, 30 years from now, what needs to happen to be able to see the real impact, and then figure out a way to work together and link together all these amazing nonprofits and different initiatives to align with that. Because it's, I don't think it starts to shift if we think about it in terms of election cycles, right? And those kind of little term limit elements.
The other thing I think that philanthropy and to a certain extent government funding gets wrong is, and even sometimes from corporate sponsorships, is we need scalability, but we don't need just numbers, right? So the impact has to be scalable so that you can actually have an impact on more people, but it's going to be more expensive. And so you've got to put that additional cost in there to have the outcomes over the time frame that you're talking about. So it's not going to be a small amount of money that you're putting into it. But the benefits long term for that investment are huge, especially for a city like Philadelphia, whose tax base, when you have 40,000 vacant properties and we can start to put people into these properties who have good jobs, making good money, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So Tiffany or Jeff, anything you want to speak to about the challenges Philadelphia has, or, you know, what are the things Philadelphia still needs to sort of go to that next level in terms of being a really fertile place for companies and organizations to grow?
Yeah, I'll offer a couple of thoughts. I mean, back to the more specific area of life sciences and what's needed. I think that there is now a strong amount of sort of broad and different areas of research that are happening across the educational institutions, and a lot of new intellectual property and ideas being generated. The one area I think is still in and around one thing you mentioned before, which is around executive leadership of these entrepreneurial companies. They're still, relatively speaking, to some of the competitor markets, where when you have science and intellectual property, the reality is you can take that and move it and set up a company somewhere else. And that is still happening more than I would like to see it happen. So, and I think a lot of that has to do with, all else equal, I think the best result is to have the founding science and the founding IP close to the and proximate to the company. But, you know, an investor, an early stage investor in a company will go first where the executive talent is, and then in total where all the talent is. So I think that's still an area that can be just built out and improved and broadened. So that's one. And then, you know, secondly, I do think that, you know, to the point, Jim, that you were making, I think that the ability to broaden the opportunities for people to come from the area into these companies is going to be a function partially of a handful of companies growing up to be larger. Mm-hmm. The one challenge and one struggle with the biotech startup community is that from an opportunity perspective, most of the jobs early in any company are predominantly science-based positions. And so these roles in finance and HR and legal and marketing and commercial, they happen later, and manufacturing, they all happen later. So you might have 10, 20, 30 companies that exist, but it's all the same job type.
A lot of PhDs.
Yeah. So and, you know, and often those are advanced degrees, or there are multiple advanced degrees. So, you know, one of the things that will benefit the community is to have a few more organizations that grow up to be teenagers, so to speak, in, you know, corporate stage, and then eventually become adults and sort of are large organizations that have revenues and therefore, you know, are funding, self-funding a lot of their future investments and building manufacturing sites and so on and so forth. That really starts to mushroom the number and different types of positions and the different interests that people might have in the jobs in these companies.
I mean, even having that big building when you come out of 30th Street Station with your name on the side,
yeah.
I mean, that's just people, it's going to be in their brains in this different way. I mean, that makes such a difference.
And the way I see it is we have an opportunity to kind of expand the pie, thinking about medical devices, digital health applications, the convergence of what's happening in bioscience and technology and the new jobs and industries that come from that, where you almost think about their various different timelines to commercialization and scale. And so you can almost create a pipeline of companies and executives in that general space, where there might be technical jobs or lower level jobs earlier in the cycle as the industry as a whole grows and evolves. You know, I think it's interesting to me coming in where I see the opportunity is a lot of people say, oh, well, to have a robust digital health med tech industry, you've got to have a top tier medical school and a top tier engineering school. and you don't. You need unmet needs to solve. And if you look at across Greater Philadelphia, the number of healthcare systems in the region and the number of patients under care, there's a lot of problems here to solve. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we can really align ourselves in different ways and really harness other entrepreneurial capacity in the region to complement what's so strong on the cell and gene therapy side, I think there's a way that we can do a lot more.
And I still think that there's a gap in that leadership also, right? And I also, like, for me, being in this space changed the whole dynamic of our organization, because we were all small business, some real estate, not involved with science at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I even have a best friend of mine who's a biologist and doctorate and all the rest of that. And he says words that I had no idea what he's talking about. And yet, being here now has opened up the opportunity for us to look at recruitment to Philadelphia, where I didn't think that that would be a part of the vested inside. Now, because it's opened up to me, it also helps me as a CDFI start to look at different capital to support those ancillary business, because you're going to get your capital, right? Yeah. For the most part. But those ancillary businesses that can support additional growth while you are growing to being the adult, I think that's the other part. So how can we find these businesses that are the suppliers to the Fords and the Chryslers that they're never going to be as big as you, but they're going to supply you with things. And if we can make those companies strong, we're going to be doing really well as the city as a whole also.
Yeah.
The interesting data nationally around the biotech industry. For every job in a biotech company, you create 5 jobs outside of that company. Mm-hmm. And so those are a whole range of businesses from the people who are building the facilities to mm-hmm. the people who are staffing the facilities, providing, food and cafeteria services, mm-hmm. restaurants around them, to legal services, accounting mm-hmm. services. Those 20 or 30 biotech companies that are small, that are primarily staffed with PhD, there is still a huge, compounding effect on those other businesses outside. And you're right, they have, those are different sources of capital and different ways to grow, but also opportunities for people.
Absolutely.
Right. There's that neighborhood story, right? When you have a lot of people working, living in a neighborhood, mm-hmm. it's good for everyone. The deli on the corner and the coffee shop, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think though, West Philly, and I think that Penn and Drexel have always contended with this issue. There is also issues around racial equity here. I mean, this is a majority black neighborhood. A lot of these industries have traditionally not been very diverse. What can we do to change that? And what can we do to really bring... We've talked a little bit about bringing people in the neighborhood and using education and using outreach, but is there anything else anyone wants to bring up around these issues around racial equity?
Well, I think you got to do 2 things. So on the one hand, you have to be invited to spaces, right? So most folks, again, don't feel comfortable in these spaces because they've never been invited. And in fact, the design of the buildings that are put up in most cases are designed to keep them out. And so from a landscape perspective, the landscape has not been set up to include them. So one, how do you include them in that process? 2, you have to be willing to, not just from an invitation perspective, but to be committed to it. Right? Because you're going to upset some people. And if you're not willing to kind of be unapologetic about this is what we're interested in, and I mean from a leadership perspective, that this is this type of company that we want to have, or this is the type of city that we want to have. And yeah, we're going to have people who object to that, but if we don't make those investments, or if we constantly make a minor adjustment here and a minor adjustment there, before you know, you've minored adjustments your way all the way back to where you were to start with. And unfortunately, that's not moving the needle. On the other side, from the community side, it's trusting in that next person. So if Tiffany is saying, I know we had some a whole lot of stuff that wasn't working before, I'm here to tell you, I'm trying to do it differently. I need your help. You've got to give her a shot to try to make it work. Because if you don't give her the shot, who is committed to being a part of it, that's where you're going to still run into these same problems, because we didn't even give the opportunity for somebody. And I will say this finally is, I can't depend on Tiffany. even though I'm giving her the opportunity, I still have to do things myself as that community member to make sure I'm prepared with resources, or how do I get something else, or have more Tiffany's that we can put around us to make sure it happens.
It's interesting you mentioned the built environment being closed off, because when I first came to Quorum 10 years ago, it was on the 8th floor. And it was, you had to go up in an elevator, and if you had to get a pass, and now it's on the ground floor. Mm-hmm. And so you can see people, you can come into the building, you can get a coffee, and it's a small change. Maybe it's not a small change, it's a big change, and I think those things make a difference.
They do make a difference, but I think, to Jim's point, we have to invite people in, mm-hmm. right? It's still a big glass, mm-hmm. fancy, shiny building. And so we like to address that through our first hand in bowl programs, where we are inviting these people in, these students come in to a dedicated lab just for them that's beautiful. And then there's real scientists who come in to show them experiments, mentor them, they can go tour the facilities. And so it goes to this whole concept of you can't be what you can't see. And so they can see, and it's just, you know, it could just be a conversation or a serendipitous connection that can change the trajectory of someone's life. And, you know, the bulb participants who are adults come in, and there's a certain element of, I don't know if I trust this or not. I don't know, you know, I'm kind of stepping outside my comfort zone here a little bit. But I've had the privilege of getting to see bulb participants in their first week and talk to them about the importance of networking, and then see them at the end. And you just see a degree of enthusiasm and confidence that didn't exist 5 weeks prior.
Can you talk a little bit more about that program?
Yeah, it's building an understanding of lab basics. It's really a workforce training program that brings adults with a high school degree or maybe some college into the Science Center for a 5 week period, where they get to work in a lab and learn how to pipette and, you know, wear lab coat and get lectures on just becoming comfortable with the basics of lab skills, to prepare them for maybe an internship or to then move on to one of the longer term workforce development programs that exist across Greater Philadelphia. But what we started to layer in that's been really important is, you know, we've had great partners like Citizens Bank and TD to provide financial literacy training. We've got Intro Molecular, their HR group, and GSK have been doing resume review with them, practice interviewing skills. We help them set up a LinkedIn page and be comfortable with that. So a lot of these kind of basic level, just comfort level and going into a building like this and interviewing for a job and feeling a better sense of confidence for that. And so there's an opportunity, I think, to expand that program, which is something we're working on right now, to really focus on those career pathways. What are all the other jobs? Well, I didn't like being behind the microscope, but I'm a really good writer. How do I marry those two interests and be a scientific communicator? Or maybe I want to be an executive. I was inspired by that kind of lecture. Maybe I'll move from this program to CCP to start down a business degree, and then, you know, open it up to other higher institutions of learning across the city.
I would just add something slightly different, which is that I think within the companies themselves, I think one of the things that's important is to not only make sure that you are inviting at the earliest ages as mm-hmm. possible, kids in to see what this is like and what the opportunities might be. And then the second piece to that is, I think the companies in the general industry can and should do a better job in just sort of how they push themselves to look and build their networks of people of all backgrounds and stripes mm-hmm. and sizes. And I think I would often encourage that to my team back when I was CEO and operating, which is that, you know, you might have someone you already know, and that's often the case. People are usually hiring people they already know. And just taking the extra time to pick up the phone, call someone to ask to be introduced to somebody new, even if it may or may not even end up being the person you hire, you just start to build a broader and different network of people. Yeah. And I think you have to be intentional. And what that is a very intentional effort. Some of this will be long-term for the industry to have a much broader representation of people from different backgrounds. But some of it, I think, can be done sooner. And I think the more you have people at senior levels who are also of different backgrounds and parts of society, I think the more that helps when that child walks in and sees not just a chance to meet someone in a science-based company, but meet someone who they can connect with and relate to in some way based on their background and the person's background.
Yeah. Great. So let's do sort of a fun question. If you had the CEO of a startup and they were looking for a home for their company and they said, I've never been to Philadelphia, I want to come check it out, I hear good things, where would you take them? What's the itinerary? And this can be business, this can be fun, this can be just sell them on Philadelphia.
So I'd probably take them to a few places. I think that most people do not sort of understand the breadth of Philadelphia's sort of green and open space and public parks. So whether you took them to a big one like Fairmont Park or you took them to an individual community-based park, I think it's just a very little known thing about Philadelphia, which more and more is something that people care more about for good reason. I'd probably take them to any number of sort of cultural institutions that the city has, because again, there's a huge depth there. Someone shared a number with me recently that this is more economic than it is sort of experiential, but economically, the cultural organizations within the city generate more economic activity than the sports teams.
Wow.
Now, no one probably realizes that because everyone knows and thinks about and watches ESPN and the latest news. But they're not only do they have and serve such an important impact, but I think, you know, people, again, want to be connected with what those are. And, you know, you could think about things, the very prominent ones. You could think about ones that are in community and local. And the third thing is I'd probably take them to some food establishment of some way, shape, or form, because I think that whether it's sort of the fancy new ones that win James Beard Award X, or whether it's the local one, again, in the community that no one knows about, this place where you get a roast beef sandwich, those are the three things I'd probably do.
Yeah, and the cultural institutions, they make you feel good. The sports teams mostly make you feel bad.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, everyone warned me when I moved here about the sports fans in Philadelphia. What would I do? I'd bring them here to the Science Center, and you know, I like to stand over in front of the new One U City building, and if I stand there in that lawn space and I look at the Science Center, a place where entrepreneurs come to convene and really a catalyst for that activity, and then I look right behind the Science Center in Drexel's new health sciences building. Right, so the next generation of doctors, nurses, health professionals. And then I turn and look at the One U City where all of these amazing new lab spaces and innovations will go, and innovators from Penn are moving in there and starting these amazing companies. And then I turn and look that way and there's Penn Medicine. And so you've got this amazing, right here in University City, all of the students and the innovators and the patients and the problems to solve. It's just really unique, I think. And so that would be inspiring for an early stage CEO, I think. I'm with you, Jeff, on like taking people around for the food. The food scene here is unbelievable. So I'd probably take them. My favorite spot is Vernick Fish. It's my go-to spot. And so I'd probably take them to the top of the Four Seasons, to JG Sky High, to have a drink and overlook the city, which is just breathtaking, the views there.
I went up in that elevator once and I was alone in it and I was like squealing like a child. I was so delighted. I was so delighted. I felt like Willy Wonka.
I can't look out the window until I get to the top. And then I would take them to the Barnes or the Philadelphia Museum of Art and kind of maybe walk along the Schuylkill Trail Boathouse Row there. It's just absolutely beautiful. And I never knew about these green spaces in Philadelphia, and it's just really quite lovely.
Yeah, I love all of theirs. I mean, as a board member of the Philadelphia Parks Alliance. I love your answer. I think that's fantastic. And food especially was on my list. But I'd also take them to the neighborhoods because I think Philly has some of the most unique neighborhoods that are actually getting better every day and stronger every day. And especially, they had a dip during COVID, but there's more reinvigoration of these communities than there ever has been. And some of it can be challenging, but I think it's all, for the most part, is really good. So whether that is to a small restaurant in North Philadelphia or Germantown or even Fairmount with all the energy that's going on over there, just want to show them that everything is not downtown and everything is not University City, but the collective of what you get out of Philadelphia is so much stronger than the one area or another.
Mural tour.
Mural tour is excellent.
And the great thing about Philly is you can walk so much of the city.
Yeah.
You know, it's so compact. You can do so much on foot. You can really, you know, on foot in an hour hit three or four neighborhoods.
Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, even our public transportation, as much as we beat it up ourselves, gets you to a lot of different places. And the other piece with Philadelphia and transportation is our proximity, right? So if I had more time, hey, let's go take a train to New York or to DC. To have that proximity, especially if you want to get into manufacturing and then all the logistical stuff around that, you have the opportunity to do that too.
So the Science Center is celebrating 60 years. Tiffany, you mentioned this. It's a long time. Let's think about 60 years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
People are ready to look into a crystal ball. Tell me, what is your vision for Philadelphia in 60 years?
Well, I'll go first. I would hope it, to maybe build on what Jim mentioned before, I would hope it still maintains sort of the richness and difference and diversity of all these neighborhoods. I mean, I think it is, in some ways it is a single city, but in many ways it's sort of a collection of really unique neighborhoods. And I think the trick is to be to maintain that while moving, frankly, moving the city into the pole positions, a new world and a new economy that we're moving into, and economies where we have been moving into. Clearly, in the area of life sciences, I think there's a chance for Philadelphia to build on the last decade or so of progress in cell and gene therapy and turn that into, you know, the place that you want to go to build a company that's doing cell and gene therapy, which the reason why that's so important is because it might be niche tomorrow, but if you look in 60 years, it's going to be the predominant way in which we deliver medicines and change human health. And so it's a perfect way to have a strategy, right? Because you can start and be super focused in something that's going to become really big, as opposed to trying to boil the ocean and be everything right now, which is harder to do. But I think it's just one example of picking a space where there is some, you know, fundamental substrate that is really great here.
More and science metaphors. I love it.
and basically making it the place that everyone wants to be. And there are very concrete things that I think that can be done, and a lot of work I think that is already happening, work that can be improved upon. But a lot of it does come down to quality of life. And I think if this is the place that people see the best quality of life, and I think if you can pair that with sort of a growing, thriving 1, 2, 3, 5, you know, sectors or industries that people say, I need to be here because that's where that activity is happening. I mean, to me, that's the future.
Yeah, I would love us to have at least two other industries that folks aren't even thinking about now, where we are the dominant player in it again. 60 years is a lot of time, and we just think how fast things change right now. I would hope that Philadelphia still remains at the high end of innovation. And so whether it's deeper into gene therapy or other things with health or AI or something else that kind of we can't think about at the moment, but that we are still want to be leaders in that. I love the idea of it being a space where people want to live. Just because it's a good place to live, we have good air quality, we have clean water, you know, our streets are clean. Those types of things that just attract people because they want to be in that space. We can still be crotchety and fuss because of the Eagles and our sports teams.
I was going to say, how many Super Bowls?
I just want the Sixers.
I just want the Sixers to win once. The Sixers won last year I was born. I just want one Sixers championship.
Well, you might have to wait a few years for that one. But I think the most important thing for me is for Philadelphia to appreciate itself. I think we underappreciate ourselves right now. And if we can do that in 60 years, hopefully faster than that, but in 60 years, that would be great.
In 60 years, you know, I envision a Philadelphia that's truly kind of building on all this great work to be a global leader in innovation and kind of how innovation ecosystems work, where economic opportunity tied to these industries aren't determined by what zip code you live in. But are really determined by your ideas and your willingness to collaborate. I think that we will continue, we have to continue building on partnerships and kind of the interdisciplinary connections to drive it forward. And with an eye on making sure that the next generation of students and leaders, you know, that everyone has the opportunity to have a seat at the table.
Thank you to Tiffany, Jeff, and Jim for chatting with me. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can start by attending the Nucleus Awards. They're being held on September 26th at the Science Center. Visit sciencecenter.org for details.